Unlabeled Leadership is a volunteer service. We appreciate our guests for their stewardship and remarkable stories. We also appreciate listeners like you who back the show with star reviews and contributions.
Gary DePaul with Unlabeled Leadership. Welcome to episode 136, Mike Thorne on the new P&L, People and Listening. Here's a shout out to listeners in Uruguay and in the United States, Brunswick, Ohio, East Aurora, New York, Portland, Maine, and Fox Lake, Illinois. With that, let's get started. Having served as the CEO of a synthetic turf company, president of a Russell Athletic Team Division, and president of Yankee Candle, Mike has had to read numerous P&L sheets over his tenure. From his experience in these roles, Mike explains that the most critical P&L is not the profit and loss, but people and listening. Currently, Mike is a Vista chair where he facilitates for small and mid-sized business owners and coaches subject matter experts in under 5 employee companies. Mike is someone you'll want to get to know. Part 1, letting go of the 1,000-pound weight on your shoulders. Confronting a bully, being a hero, working 80 hours a week, those are not the best examples of being tough. A better one is being vulnerable with the people you work with. In this part, Mike talks about his journey to vulnerability. He also talks about EQ, which stands for emotional quotient, or emotional intelligence is the more common phrase for it. If you have high emotional intelligence, you can recognize your own emotions and those of others, use that emotional information to guide your thinking and behavior, discern between different feelings, and label them appropriately. And it also means being able to adjust your emotions to adapt to environments. In episode 26, Peter Popovich explains emotional intelligence. We talk about what emotional intelligence is. In that episode, Peter has a great analogy. He says, EQ is two bottles of rum, R-U-M, which stands for recognize, understand, and manage our emotions, the first bottle, and then recognize, understand, and manage the emotions of others, the second bottle. Rum squared increases our intelligence, options, and happiness. Here's Mike talking about his journey.
When I was 9 years old, my parents brought me down to our family room. We were living in Sturbridge, Mass., about an hour west of Boston. And they brought me into the room. We had, you know, the typical plush carpeting in New England with the wood panel, the wood stove, the TV with the antenna that has the tinfoil on it so you can watch TV. I sat in my favorite beanbag chair and they sat on the couch. They looked at each other. They looked at me and they said, "We just want you to know that you're adopted and we love you very much." That particular conversation really shook my world. I had always thought I belonged and felt I had this family and friends and neighborhood. And all of a sudden, I thought, I don't belong anymore. Who am I? Why would somebody give a kid up? And it really shaped really my whole life. And to this day, still shapes it because of that experience.
That is an amazing experience. And I can't even relate to what that would be like as a 9-year-old receiving that news. But it sounds like it was said in a very loving way.
Yeah, they were. And then ironically for me, I had a chance to watch Hank Aaron later. It was in April of 1974, still, you know, 9.5 years old by then. He was about to break Babe Ruth's home run record. My dad let me stay up and watch it. And I was fascinated watching someone who was a man of color. So there was half society wanted to see him fail. The amount of criticisms and racism that was going on in those days against him was extraordinary, and I was really taken by that. But at the same time, I saw the other side of people, just pure joy, breaking a sports record in baseball's full of records. And then the dignity that Hank Aaron showed throughout it all, I was like, you know what? That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be a professional baseball player because that's where I think I can belong. And that really catapulted me into playing sports and meeting a lot of people along the way that I built, which I now refer to as a personal trust community. I didn't have that language back then, but just these people that I trusted implicitly because I know they had their best interest in me. and coming from where I came from, you have this abandonment and lack of trust issues because of what just you experienced, at least I did. Not uncommon, it's very common in adopted people, but not all. That's really what triggered my growth as a human, as an athlete, and ultimately as a business person and a father and husband, was that whole experience really catapulted me at that young age.
That's a powerful message about surrounding yourself with people that you can trust, that people that have your best interest in mind and recognizing that versus someone who may drag you down, but you don't recognize that when it's happening.
Yeah, and at that age, I was too young to understand or appreciate it, but I naturally gravitated towards the first baseball coach I had. So my dad was 5'3", bow-legged, had no hearing in one ear. He was a challenging human being sometimes, and I always wanted to be perfect because the last thing I want to do is do something wrong, so I'd be rejected again. Unfortunately, that sort of shaped me in many ways and hurt me in building relationships. For some reason on the sports field and in the gyms, I always felt I could be myself and be who I really was and feel like I belonged. Outside of that, I didn't because I was always afraid of being rejected. So I never did build strong relationships because of fear that they may end up blowing up on me because of what I experienced at a young age. But there was a people that I met in coaching that were just nice people. The first guy was 6'2", had a pipe, super nice personality, very easygoing human being. And he really took care of me and he helped me grow because I was a terrible player when I first started. I just started to realize, boy, there's going to be certain people I'm going to meet. They're going to be really people that I can trust and count on, that I know they have my best interests and not judging me. So how do I find those people in my life? And so I began in a very unsophisticated and not really intentional way, but I started to learn over time how powerful that could be. And it started right out of the gate with what happened in that experience. I was 40 years old and got fired for the first time. It was an experience that, as painful as it was, it was really the first time I had to reckon with this idea that I could do it on my own. Like throughout my career, I was a salesperson and a key account person and a VP of sales and ultimately became president of a company. All these people obviously must have thought that I was doing everything right because I kept getting promoted. People kept coming to me and wanted me to do these jobs. And I thought I was just doing it all perfectly until I got fired. A lot of it came down to my lack of emotional intelligence because I did reach out to these people that I trusted and they all just said, look, you've got skills, tenacity, you know, bubble, all that kind of stuff, but you're just lacking emotional intelligence as a leader. You can't be, you know, having an organization counting on you to show the way and lead the way and you're getting frustrated and upset and showing your emotions. And I didn't, again, at that age or even that time in my life, have the full understanding of language where it was coming from. But it clearly, as I learned further on, it came from what I experienced at a young age, this abandonment and trust. And when I went to my next company, I was very, very blessed to work for the kind of people that helped me catapult the next phase of my career. That was transformational.
It really is amazing hearing someone say that when they were fired and it was related to lack of emotional intelligence. During that time period, emotional intelligence, EQ, was not a popular concept, but there has been a radical change in how people lead and the concept of leadership, which is really pushed towards that ability to put others first, connect with other people, believe in other people. You have successfully overcome some of those challenges. I'm sure that has helped not only you, but the people around you.
Yeah. So when I went through that experience, I, you know, was miserable for a few days. We were heading to Disney with our kids. Personally, I felt like I was that 9-year-old kid again, that I was rejected and I wasn't good enough. And so I really went into a shell and thought everybody would leave me and nobody would be there for me. Again, I had no training, no experiences. So I went back into that until I reached out to some people, you know, beyond my wife, reached out to people in business that I respected that had been there for me. And they just walked me through in a very professional way, some things to think about and, you know, what lessons could you learn? So they really gave me both the framework and the language to think about, you know, leading again. And then one other thing that happened was I ended up having a lot of emails come from the people that worked with me and for me. All along, I thought as long as you deliver the financial and operational obligations of the business, you're doing your job as a leader. The feedback I got, I think of the 20 people that sent an email to me or more, not one of them said a word about, hey, great job. I learned a lot about how to hit financial targets. What I got was, I'm going to miss the coaching. I'm going to miss the way you try to pull people together, the teamwork, the communication, like all these things that I would refer to as the P&L on talent versus the P&L on the business. And P&L is just people and listening. I was just struck by those emails, reading them over and over again, and thought, boy, I just wasn't paying attention to how crucial that was to getting employees to be more than compliant. You know, most people are going to comply no matter who the leader is. They need a job. They want the paycheck. They got bills to pay. So they comply with the direction of the company. But if you need people to really go on the journey with you, you really need them to be on board. And the only way they get on board is they trust you and they feel like you're there for them. When I got that feedback, I realized I need to go find a company, find people that care about that as much as I do and the value of employees. And I landed at Yankee Candle. Within a year, I had my next transformational moment where I met a lady named Doreen Exford, and she was a director of learning and development. And she came to my office and she said, "You got a minute?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "I have good news and bad news." And I said, "Okay." And she said, "You know, you're in the president of wholesale business now for a year." And she goes, "I would tell you that the employees and the other senior leaders feel like you're the most approachable senior executive we have in the company. You've done a really, really good job in the area." And I said, "Oh, thank you." I said, "What's the bad news?" And she said, "Your standards are just way, way too high." And I said, "Doreen, I don't know how that can be. I played college sports. I've been an athlete. I have competitive industries." I said, "I don't know how the standards really can be too high." She said, "You know, your team for your birthday gave you this beautiful framed picture of a canoe in the middle of the water with nobody in it. It talked about taking a journey and they laughed when they gave it to you. And you just said, 'Oh, it's so beautiful. Thank you.' And you, because I talk about going on a journey. So that's kind of what I picked up on it." She said, "What they're telling you is they don't know how they could ever meet your standards to go on that journey with you. So you're on it alone right now, as much as they want to be there with you." It was another one of those 2x4s across the head. And then she sat me down and she said, "I think there's a hole in you somewhere. Let's talk about that." Through that 2-hour dialogue, I told her for the first time, I publicly told her I'd been adopted and some of the, you know, trust issues and issues with abandonment, all that. And she had her own lived experience. And I just felt really close to her the first time I went there. We just connected. And I think you would find people that have had some sort of experience in their life like that, just somehow like very discerning, generally speaking. You can pick up on those things. And so we did. And I trusted her implicitly. And she said, "What I would recommend you do is the first thing is to walk the floor and talk about your weekend with your employees and your staff." I had about 100 people. And just walk around in a week, check in on people, see how they're doing. Just share a couple things about your life. I know that's not you. You feel worried that if you do that, they're going to think less of you. She said, "But pick something that happened to you the weekend, the day before, something that's going on, and just walk the floor. Don't always walk the same way because you want to make sure you touch as many people as you can. Walk different ways on the floor and make sure you don't get into a pattern. Just try different things." And she said, "The second thing I want you to do is I want you to tell your story to the Toastmasters group." And I said, "Doreen, I've never shared this. I don't think I can do that." And she said, "No." She goes, "There's a hole, and I think this is where the hole is, and I need you to think about that." Because I had built the relationship with Doreen, I was willing to go do it. When I did, I still have the video today. It just really took about 1,000-pound weight off my shoulders. And instead of having people think less of me after I did, I had people come up to me after and were just so amazed that I shared the story. And then more importantly, there were a few people that actually had been adopted themselves. It really began to help me understand the power of vulnerability, which wasn't a word that was used a lot then, obviously, but it began to help me appreciate that. And slowly but surely, as a leader, I started to open up more and started to just share more about me and try to listen to other people's stories. It ultimately moved me from people being compliant to get versus they just would do whatever they had to do to help the business be successful. So that was really a great transition from one industry to another. I had no experience in it, but unbelievable 7 years of my life. That was worth 3 MBAs and 2 PhDs.
Part 2, tell me your story. When you're vulnerable and open with your superior, good things can happen or bad things. At one company, I had a really difficult director that I reported to. It was so difficult that I started having panic attacks. When I told him what was going on, he said, "Hey, I didn't realize it. I'll work with you. It'll be fine." 2 days later, my role was eliminated. That is probably on the bad end, but it had a good results, actually. But when you're vulnerable and open with a superior and you have the right superior, great things could happen. In this story, Mike talks about one of the positive experiences when you open up and share your story. Here's Mike to explain.
I had somebody that was working for me in a leadership position. An opening in the division came up that would have been a promotion for this individual and also a higher salary. Everybody was rooting for this person to take the job. I had my reservations. I wasn't sure that the transition from the role they were playing to this one was a good fit. And I also was concerned that the individual was chasing something that they needed for validation versus what they really wanted. Because of that, I chose to sit down with this leader and have a conversation about the particular role expectations. I always start these conversations off with tell me your story. I always feel the better you know someone, the better chance you have to help them get where they want to go. And so when he shared his story, a couple of things came out. One is he was one of several boys in his family. His father passed away when he was young. His brothers were much older than he was. He didn't have, quote, a mentor in his life, as he said it. Unbeknownst to me, he saw me as that person in his life. That was the first moment of, whoa, okay, wow, I've really got to. So we talked through that quite a bit. Then on the job itself was a head of sales in the most prominent sales role in the company. The most resources were going to be given to it, the biggest investments. And it was also a piece of my business that was struggling a little bit. He then said to me, he said, well, I really want this job, but I don't want to take on a role where the business is down 2%. So I said to him, I'm not sure that you want to be in sales then. And he said, oh, yes, I do. And I said, well, most people in sales who see an opportunity to take on the most prominent piece of the company's business will get the highest priorities, the most resources, and the most investment in a premium business like this would be thrilled to take this on because they think they can turn it around. We then got into a conversation and I realized very quickly that he was someone that was chasing this for the title and not because he really wanted to go do it. And once we dove in deep, he said to me something that I've not forgotten today. He said, he goes, Mike, here's the thing. And he goes, I feel comfortable saying this to you. I wouldn't normally want to say this because I think if I said this, I'd probably get fired. He said, I want to be in the room where decisions get made. And he said, you know, the Staples red button. I said, yeah. And he said, I want to be in the room when that button's in there, decision's going to get made. I just don't want to be the one pushing the button to make it. I want to be in the room so I can contribute to the conversation, but I don't want to push the button. What we came out of there was, A, the trust had been built over the time we'd worked together. And so he was courageous enough to share his fears and concerns, both personally and professionally. I also had the confidence that he was going to be a key member of the team. So we walked down the road of scope enhancement so that he still felt valued. He still felt he was critical of the team, but he was not going to get in a position where the pressure was going to be so high that he would be fearing failure and the company would be put at risk. And by scope enhancement, what I meant was he had enormous skill sets in customer service, sales operations, and planning. So we had a European operation that was struggling in those areas. The decision we made as a company, I started the conversation, got everybody on board with it, was why don't we send him over there, use his talents and skills in another way that enhances value to the company. He was ready to go through the moon. He was so pumped up that we thought that he was that valued. And sitting there, thought he was going to get fired. It was probably one of the biggest moments for me to realize, you know, sometimes we promote people because they're skilled at a particular role they're playing, but leading people, leading a team is a whole different skill set. So instead of doing that to him, we put him in a position where we're able to enhance the scope of the work he was really good at. He had become by far the most valuable employees, not just for me, but the rest of the company saw him as probably one of the top 5 or 6 people in the entire company after that whole transition.
Part 3, it's Brady time. In these episodes, my guests offer advice that can help you improve on how you lead, work with others, and just be a better person. Mike offers his advice as well on how you can be more effective at leadership. But it starts in an unusual place. Again, here's Mike.
I would highly, highly recommend that whenever you wake up in the morning, if you're a leader, the first thing you do is you wash your face, you drink water. And then I would recommend there's a book called The Stoic. It is a paragraph, maybe 2 paragraphs at most. And when you read that book, Ryan Holiday, very well-known author, you get a perspective on the day. It gives you some thoughtful ways to think about the day ahead of you versus jumping into emails and worrying about what went wrong over the night or what issues you're going to deal with in the day. So wash your face, drink water, get yourself hydrated in the morning. It'll refresh you, get you ready for the day, and then read something like The Stoic. Really simple, 1 paragraph, sometimes 2, like I said, and it'll help you get in the right frame of mind as you start the day off. would be my suggestion before you head in, if you go into an office or whatever. If you happen to be walking into an office and you're in a building, and I know that's a little unique in these days, is to just walk around your office. And like I said in my own story, go different ways, talk to different people. There are times I've experienced where people actually see you going the same way to work every day, and you get into this habit and they start saying, well, I guess they don't care about me. And you're thinking, no, I just go to work this way. I don't even think twice about it. But I've had people tell me that when they do that, they're shocked at how happy people are to see the boss coming down the aisle to say hi to them in the morning when they're not used to them doing that. So try to think about different ways, mix it up, create some different patterns as you go to work in a day. But the first thing is just get your face washed, drink some water, and read something like that Stoic, I think would be a great way to get your frame of mind in the right place as you begin your day.
What I like about that, it illustrates what your stories are about. As professionals, we could get so caught up in the work itself and focus on what we're comfortable with, the technical functional part, where we don't take enough time to be reflective, which is how I interpret what you were saying about how to start your morning, giving yourself perspective and giving yourself the opportunity to be exposed to different people in the business on an informal basis. I resonate with that. When I was at my last company, the CEO walked down the hallway. You just don't see him that often. Had a great conversation with him and one of my colleagues, Don Kirky, about, of all things, NASCAR.
Yep.
When the CEO comes across and talks with you on something like that, the company sponsored a NASCAR team. It really humanizes who the CEO is. It's more than just a title. It's fascinating and fantastic when employees get to experience that. I believe he gets a lot out of it too.
Yeah. And again, I've got the guy that I used to work for who's a huge Patriots fan, and we used to struggle to get things done. And once we built those relationships and I knew how big a fan he was, I could literally just knock on his door, Gary, and say, hey, it's Brady time.
I love it.
And he knew that that meant, hey, we got to deliver for the quarter. We got to hit these things. We got to get this done. Like, I didn't have to go spend 15 minutes trying to say, God, please help me. Make sure you do what you can. And then try to babysit and overmanage. Like, I just knew that he knew what that meant. And he said to me, he goes, Mike, when you came to the company, we would always kick the field goal. And he said, you had us think about, well, how do we score the touchdowns? And he said, it's made a huge difference in terms of how we share resources across the multiple platforms we had in the company. So I just can't thank you enough for that. And those are just little things that you don't realize until you actually go through those experiences.
My thanks to Mike Thorne. If you'd like to learn more about Mike, go to the show notes. If you have a question or comment, go to unlabeledleadership.com, click the message icon, and leave a voicemail message for up to 1 minute. I'd like to thank those who donate to the show. Your contributions makes a difference because this is an all-volunteer service. I'd like to thank you for listening. This is Gary DePaul. Until next time, lead on.